So I hope that I can encourage you to think the same way and make this such a memorable and inspired and enjoyable weekend that it will begin to take on something of a religious service where God is instilling in us a character as the family of God that's to maintain that image until His Son comes and causes the whole world to become one great, peaceful, inspiring, joyous family.
Good afternoon. We're certainly enjoying our chance to be here with you. My wife and our two children are here, and as well as some of our church members from Toledo. And I certainly am impressed with the hall that you have. I was telling, I think, Mr. Williams that, or someone, that your facilities are certainly much finer in Michigan than they are in Toledo. Ohio's property taxes are slightly less, so you can certainly see the difference when you do pay higher taxes. So those of you who are apt to complain, which I know some of you from Michigan are because your property taxes are even going up higher, at least consider the fact that you do have the benefit of meeting in such a very fine hall. Certainly want to express my thanks to Mr. Williams for inviting us up today. He has done an outstanding job as our district coordinator in YOU. Everything is well organized, as church services here are today. And I certainly think you can be thankful that you have him if you are a member of the Detroit Church as your pastor. There was an interesting newspaper cartoon a few years ago, and it showed this small boy out in center field, and he was watching this fly ball that was coming down, and he was thinking as it was coming down, "Now, if I catch that ball, my manager is going to like me, my friends are going to think I'm great, my parents are going to adore me, and I'm going to be a hero." And he was just feeling great and exalted with that thought. But then his mind switched over, and he thought, "Now, if I miss that ball, then the manager isn't going to like me, my friends are going to make fun of me, my parents aren't even going to let me in the house, and I'm going to be a dud." And so the next scene is the boy is waiting for the ball, and sure enough, he catches it, but it bounces out, and then he looks down at the ground, his shoulders are hanging down, and he shakes his head, 6 years of age, and already a failure. Now, that cartoon illustrates something about our philosophy towards life. And our philosophy is, winning isn't everything, it's the only thing. That's very much ingrained in the thinking of us as Americans. I have a book that's very interesting. It's called Winning is Everything and Other American Myths. And there's some interesting quotes in this book from people in professional athletics. And I'd like to share just a few of those with you. One is from George Allen. How many of you know George Allen, the football coach of the Washington Redskins, former coach? He says, "The winner is the only individual who is truly alive. I've said this to our ball club. Every time you win, you're reborn. When you lose, you die a little." Now let's go on to Darryl Royal, former football coach at University of Texas. "The only way I know how to keep football fun is to win. That's the only answer. There is no laughter in losing." Or we can take baseball manager Billy Martin. He's bringing the Oakland Athletics back into being a successful baseball club. He says, "The players may not like you some of the time, but I've always made the statement, I'd play Adolf Hitler to win." And then here's Pete Maravich, who was a guard for the New Orleans basketball team. He says, "I'm really only happy when I'm winning. Losses always bother me." So we have those that we look up to, at least many in our society look up to, who are saying to us, in essence, there's only one way to be happy, and that's be number one. And that's the kind of society we live in. A society that says there is no place for a person who loses. And because that attitude, because that philosophy is so deeply ingrained in our minds, as human beings, we oftentimes have a very difficult time losing. Now consider the example that Mr. Hampton gave us just a short while ago of Cain. Now why did Cain become so upset? Well, it was a win-loss situation as far as he was concerned. And he saw himself as a loser. He saw Abel as the winner. He saw Abel as being in the grace of God and he being rejected from the grace of God. And that made him so mad. He became so upset that what did he do? He killed his brother. Now, what do you see today in sports? What do you see happen after a team loses? What happens to the losing team after a big game like the Super Bowl? What happens to that team when they go into the locker room? Well, chances are some of them will take off their gear and they'll start throwing it around the locker room. Some of them will begin kicking the lockers. Others will begin swearing at one another. They'll begin to blame one another, and there'll be this totally unhappy atmosphere that is created in the locker room of the losers. Now, of course, in the locker room of the winner, it's just the opposite, isn't it? It's champagne, it's rejoicing, and it's what Mr. Armstrong has described as the difference between the ecstasy of winning versus the agony of defeat. And that's what we have. We have this reaction because we as people have not learned how to lose. We haven't learned what Jesus Christ came to teach us. Jesus Christ came to this earth to teach us many things. And one of the things that Jesus Christ came to teach us through example is how to lose. Jesus Christ has taught us, or should be teaching us, that we can even lose our lives and still feel good about it. Let's take a look at Isaiah chapter 53, verse 7. Isaiah chapter 53, verse 7. Jesus Christ came to this earth with everything from the past. He had going for him the very top position in the universe next to his Father. He had the power of creating all that we see about us. And yet Jesus Christ was willing to lose all of that. He was willing to give every single thing that he ever possessed up so that he could come down to this earth and be our Savior, could be our sacrifice for us. And look at the attitude in which he went about the loss of his life. Look at the attitude that Jesus Christ had when he lost the most important thing that any human being has, because there is nothing more important than your life from a physical point of view. What else is more important? Even a football player would rather lose a game than lose his life. You could ask some of these players, well, what would you rather lose? Would you rather lose the Super Bowl? Would you rather lose the glory? Or would you rather lose your life? What's your choice? Now, you've got a choice. You can win the Super Bowl and if you do that, you have to lose your life. On the other hand, you have another choice. You can lose the Super Bowl and save your life. Now, how many football players do you think would choose the first alternative? I think football players, as bad as they want to win the Super Bowl, would rather keep their lives. And yet, Jesus Christ was able to give that ultimate sacrifice in a right attitude. Verse 7. He was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. He is brought as a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before her shearers is dumb. So he opened not his mouth. No profanity, no anger, no resentment, no blaming. None of those things. Jesus Christ walked to the death. Walked to that ultimate death and just did it. He did it because he knew how to lose. And that's something that human beings have not been taught. And that's what the author of this book brings out. He brings out in our whole system of competition, we don't teach how to lose. Now, there are a few mavericks. There are a few people in sports who teach things differently. We're becoming mavericks in the field of sports, in the Church of God. We're teaching sports from a different point of view. We're trying to teach sports in Toledo from a different point of view. And we've been working on some very innovative programs. We have a very extensive intramural program. And instead of pitting people against one another who are not fit to compete against one another, we equalize the teams. So we have people playing against one another who make good competition for one another. And we've had a great deal of fun and joy out of our intramural program. And because it's being run right, and still it has a long ways to go, we are bearing good fruit. But I think the point that I'm driving at, and I'm trying to illuminate in your minds, is that we need to face the issue that there is a right way to lose. Now let's turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 6. Whether we like it or not, and we probably don't, we're going to lose in life in various ways. We're not going to win every basketball game. We're not going to win every football game. We're not going to win everything on the job. And as young people, you're not going to win in everything, are you? You're not going to win. You're not going to be tops in everything. Out of all the teams in this district, how many are going to win the championship? One team. Now, we've already been eliminated. So we're already learning how to lose in that particular circumstance. But how many of you are going to end up to be the valedictorian of your class? How many of you are going to marry the best-looking girl in the class? How many of you are going to be marrying the best fellow in the class? Let's face it, we're all going to lose somewhere, sometime in our life. It's inevitable. You aren't going to be the best at everything. You're not going to get the choicest of everything in life. And we've got to face the fact that chances are we're going to lose more than we're going to win. Now just consider that in the realm of sports. How many teams won the Super Bowl? One team won the Super Bowl. How many teams were competing for the Super Bowl? 26 teams were competing for the Super Bowl. So where should we put the emphasis? On learning how to win or on how to lose? If 25 out of 26 are going to lose, shouldn't that be where we put the emphasis? But where do we put the emphasis? We put the emphasis on how to win, and only one is going to win. Now, isn't that a little backwards? It certainly is a little backwards. Now, am I against winning? Is this a message to say to everyone, now don't worry about winning? No, I'm not saying that. The Bible doesn't say that. What the Bible says is simply this. There is a time to win, and there is a time to lose. And we need to learn how to do both. And if I had two sermons, I'd give a sermon on how to win, and I'd give a sermon on how to lose. But since we're losers more than we're winners, we're going to have a sermon on losing, right? Well, certainly that's right, because I'm the one who makes the choice. You're not voting on it. And besides that, I didn't prepare the first sermon. So if Mr. Williams wants me back, then we can do it again. But since we're going to be in a different district, I guess we can't do that. So I lose, don't I? I'm not going to get that opportunity. So I've learned to accept the loss of my sermon on how to win. Now, if that doesn't have you confused, it does me. But we'll get on to verse 6 of chapter 3 of Ecclesiastes, won't we? Here in Ecclesiastes chapter 3 is a very interesting picture of what life is all about. And what life is all about is the fact that we're going to experience a variety of things, and that there is a time for the different experiences of life. In verse 6, it says, a time to get. Now we could change that word and we could say a time to win and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to cast away. So what it is saying is that there is a time in life to lose. And we need to know what are the principles that we should keep in mind when that time comes. What should we keep in mind when our team doesn't win the championship? When our team doesn't qualify for the championship game? What should we keep in mind when maybe we personally don't get the highest grade in school? When we personally don't marry the prettiest person, when we don't get what we ultimately would like to get? What should we keep in mind when we suffer a loss? What should we think about in a losing experience? Now, that's a very important question to consider. First of all, consider that losing helps you enjoy winning. Losing helps you enjoy winning. Let's turn back to Proverbs chapter 27, verse 7. Proverbs chapter 27, verse 7. Now here's a very interesting proverb that relates to what all of us have experienced from time to time, and that is a change in attitude based on the abundance or lack of abundance of that which we possess. Now, why is it that we in America don't appreciate things like the people in third world countries? Why is it that when we sit down this evening to our chicken dinner, we're not going to be sitting there raving about the food, when people from third world countries might sit down to a meal like we're going to have and they'd say, "This is scrumptious. This is great. Thank you, Mr. Williams. We've never had such a fine meal." Now, what is the reason for the difference in attitudes? Well, the reason is brought out here in verse 7. "The full soul loatheth on honeycomb, but to the hungry soul every bitter thing is sweet." Now, when you don't have much, when you haven't been successful very often, and you're successful, that means a lot, doesn't it? But on the other hand, when you're always successful, when you're always winning, what does it do to your attitude? It creates an attitude within you, "So what? What's so good about that? I've done that so many times." Now, we have the example of this with the UCLA basketball dynasty that existed under Coach John Wooden. They won the NCAA championship 7 consecutive years in a row. Now, what was the attitude of the fans after a few years? After UCLA went on and on and on and on, and they had their superstars, they had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and others who came along and just led them past everyone else. I think they won something like 88 games in a row at one time during their dynasty. What became the attitude and the philosophy and the feelings of those spectators and those people in Los Angeles after a few years? Well, the attitude became one of, "Well, we didn't win by a big enough score." And they ceased to really appreciate their dynasty. Now, contrast that with you people here in Detroit last fall. I'll remember the Detroit Lions of 1979. What did they win? 1 game or was it 2? It was 2? Was it 2 games? See, they're trying to deny their sports fans. But they are. Now, how many was it? Was it 1 game or 2? You can't even remember. That's how painful losing is, right? When you lose, you just blot it out. Right? That's the way we are. Okay? Now, it was probably either 1 or 2 games that Detroit won in 1979. In 1980, they got Billy Sims. And they began to win. And the town went wild, didn't it? I was here during the feast. And members of the church were down at Cobo Hall watching television. You know, watching the big game. Because Detroit was becoming a winner after all this famine. Now, unfortunately, they didn't continue it. But maybe fortunately because they were still learning to lose. But they did much better in 1980 than they did in 1979. And the fans in this town, this city, appreciated them far more because of the background. Now, had they had a team like the Bruins, the victories would have been rather hollow compared to the ones that they experienced because they were former losers. So losing, in a sense, just prepares you for those times when you will be a winner. And you'll be able to enjoy those experiences far more. So that's one benefit. That's one thing to keep in mind when you're losing, is that this is preparing us to enjoy the time when we will be winning. Another point. Losing helps you improve. Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 3. Let's turn there. Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 3. When you experience a loss, you think about it, don't you? Oftentimes, a team will work out much harder after it loses than after it wins, because they begin to see themselves as a team with deficiency, or a person as an individual may see himself as an individual with deficiencies. And that begins to cause that person or that team to address the problems. In chapter 7, verse 3 of Ecclesiastes, it says, "Sorrow is better than laughter, for by the sadness of the countenance the heart is made better." Now, why is it that some people tend to develop obsessions in life? One of the main reasons why they develop those obsessions is because they have lost so many times that what develops within them is this strong internal drive for success, because they want it so bad. They've been losers so long that they'll drive themselves to heights that they never would have achieved had they been successful in their lives. So losing oftentimes causes you, if you approach it in the right way, to re-examine yourself, to develop the dedication to have a better heart, a better attitude, a better approach towards the game or towards the circumstance that you're trying to achieve in. Now, another thing that losing does is that it might humble you. Now, this is all part of improving you. If you've begun to feel you're really great, or we're the great team from Detroit West, nobody beats us. And if somebody beats you this weekend, then it might be good for you, because it might humble you. Now, I don't know if Detroit West has a problem in that way. I'm sure that Mr. Hampton works with them, and they've got this perfect attitude of humility after all their victories. But I'm not so sure. But he's been working at it, I can see. But it does help you with your attitude, because you need both in life. You need to be exalted, and you need to be humbled. God's Word shows that. If all we are is humbled all the time and just brought down time after time, that's not good. It's not good to make someone lose time after time after time. But on the other hand, it's good for a person to lose from time to time, because it helps them mentally to develop the right attitude, perhaps to improve themselves, to go on to a better approach in the future. Now, a third thing to consider is that losing benefits others. Now, remember, your loss maybe somebody else's gain. If you let someone else, and you don't necessarily have to let them, but if they do beat you at something, you're bringing them a certain amount of joy. You're making them feel a little better. And if you really have love for another human being, then that'll help you lose. If you really love another person being like a child, as a parent, does it hurt to lose your children? No, not if you love them, because you enjoy what it does for them. You enjoy seeing them have a chance to win. So the loss doesn't cripple you, it doesn't ruin you, it doesn't destroy you, because you have such a love for that child. But it seems that when we deal with others our own age, that philosophy of being really concerned for the other team disintegrates, because you're not supposed to love the other team. But it's so much more fun when you do. Now, I had an interesting opportunity just a couple weeks ago to play some two-on-two basketball. And it was interesting how we began to play. Obviously, we wanted to win. But I started noting when the other fellows would make good plays. And it developed into a real brotherhood. And they'd begin to comment when I would make a good play, or my partner would make a good play. And that was one of the most enjoyable two-on-two basketball experiences I've ever had in my whole life, because we felt a kinship, a brotherhood. And even though we lost, I felt we won, because we won the spirit of brotherhood, because it really didn't matter to us, because we benefited the other team. Now, granted, I still wanted to win, and I guess it did hurt a little bit. It always does. But it was so enjoyable, because they were for us and we were for them, and we were playing to our potential, or at least trying to. Now, that brings me to the final point, and that is, keep your losses in perspective. This is the most important, I think, of probably all of these points that I'm giving you. Because there are things that are more important than winning and losing in life. Coach Allen wouldn't believe that. Coach Royal wouldn't believe that. Pete Maravich wouldn't believe that. But I believe it, and I hope that you believe it. I hope that you believe there are things more important than whether you win or whether you lose. Because it's not whether you win or lose. It's how you play the game. That's what's important. That's what's really important in life. It's not whether you score every time, but how you score. That's what's important. Not whether you came out 2 points ahead, but what was your attitude during the game? How hard did you push yourself? Did you really live up to your potential? Were you a good sport? Did it build brotherly love? Those are the things that are far more important in a game of competition that people tend to overlook. Let's turn back to Proverbs chapter 16 and verse 8. And this is a very important principle to keep in mind. I hope those of you who are going to be playing bear this in mind. That the most important thing in this district basketball tournament is not who wins, not who loses, but how everyone plays, how everyone relates together. That's what's important. That's really what is important in life. And once you learn that principle, your life is going to be far more beneficial to you and to other people. Because instead of being a self-centered, egotistical human being, you're going to blossom forth with love and concern for other human beings. Chapter 16, verse 8. Better is a little with righteousness than great revenues without right. Now, what is that saying? It's saying better is just to win maybe once in a while, maybe just occasionally, but to win because you're in the right attitude, because it's done in the right spirit. That's better than winning all the time in the wrong spirit. And I believe it. I believe it's far better to only win once in a while. But when you win with the right spirit and attitude. Because to me, there are things in life that are far more important than whether I win. What's important to me is, has this game contributed to the improvement of my character, or has it torn my character down? Has this helped build brotherly love? And I've had the opportunity to play basketball with a young man at a gym where I work out, and he's not a very good basketball player. He has a hard time really playing the game well, and so it's very easy for me, and not that I'm that good of a basketball player, because I'm not, but it's very easy for me to dominate this young man. It's very easy for me to drive on him. It's very easy for me to block him, block his shots. It's very easy for me to humiliate this young man. Now, I could do that just as others could do that to me, because I've had that happen to me. I've had other people dominate me. And because of that, I don't always like to play with those people. It's not much fun when someone has really no concern for you, but to use you to exalt their own egotistical needs. You don't really care for that. Now, this young man could be a source of my exaltation, my feelings of superiority. I could really play the game to the hilt. I could try and cause him not to score. And I could destroy what little confidence this young man has, because he doesn't have a whole lot of confidence. I can sense that, I can see that, and I know that. But I see in that young man the potential to be a better young man if I have some concern for him. So rather than driving on him, rather than pushing it all the time, I'll take a shot from far out. I'll let him rebound it. Now, I'll make him work for it, but I'm not going to drive and push and strive with all my being to humiliate the young man. Because I don't want that to happen to me. Because in my estimation, there's something more important than who scores, who wins, who's great. What's important to me is there going to be built character? Is there going to be built confidence in this young man? Is there going to be a bond of love? And I've noticed that that young man responds to me when I come into the gym. He likes to play with me. Because in life, there is something more important than who wins and who loses. And God says that. Let's turn to 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 8. 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 8. There's something far more important in this district basketball weekend than who's number one, who's number two, who's number three, and who's number four. And we need to realize that. And you as young people need to realize it. Those of us who are older people need to realize it, because to a certain extent, our children are going to be a product of our philosophy. And if our philosophy is the philosophy, winning is everything, winning is the only thing, there is nothing else in life, you've got to be number one, and if we pump that into their heads, they're going to be just like we are. Now in verse 8 it says, and I think this is very well put, and above all things. Now that includes winning and losing, doesn't it? Above all things, have fervent charity among yourselves. For charity or love shall cover the multitude of sins. Now maybe a person isn't that good of a basketball player, and in a sense, you might say, in a sense, that's like sin that has hampered them from being what they ought to be. But when there's love, it doesn't matter, because it doesn't matter if he's not quite as good. You still give him an opportunity anyway. You don't totally shut him out. You bring him into the game. You give him opportunities. You let him throw the basketball into the hoop once in a while. There's something far more important about sports than who wins and who loses. It's the attitude that is created in you as a basketball player, or a football player, or a baseball player, or whatever it is that you're competing in. And it doesn't have to be limited to sports. We compete in every facet of life. And that is the character that is built in you and the character that is built in other people. And if we catch the vision of doing this in the YOU program, we're going to see dramatic results. We're going to see more and more of our young people not striving with one another, not filled with great senses of inferiority if they're not always winning. Not other young people who the winners become the egotists, the losers become the people filled with inferiority. It's terrible. You know, Satan gets you either way. If you're a constant winner, you become an egotist. You get a swelled head. If you're a loser, you get down on yourself, get down on the world, and you're so inferior, you can't do anything. Now, God's way is to make everyone happy by exalting brotherhood, exalting love above who wins and who loses. I want to quote from this book once again as to the philosophy I believe we ought to have. He says, instead of win at all costs, we need a dictum such as sportsmanship at all costs. Athletes like Arthur Ashe, Jack Nicklaus, O.J. Simpson, and John Havlicek have proven that intense competitors can push to the limits and win or lose, still be gracious people. Keeping winning in perspective doesn't mean we don't strive to win. No, it's fine to go out there and play hard, but just don't foul the other player. Don't be down on the other player. Don't feel pouty after the game. Don't be that way. Exalt the other team if they beat you. Those of you who win, have compassion on those who lost. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about combining the best of competition with the best of brotherhood into a formula that brings joy and happiness to everyone concerned, those who are competing directly, those who are watching the competition. The real key to Christianity is learning to lose, like Jesus Christ. That's what it's all about. And I can prove that to you if you'll turn to Mark chapter 8, beginning in verse 34. The key to it all, as Christians, is the capacity, the ability to lose. To be able to lose in life in such a way that you ultimately are going to win. And that's what God wants. Mark chapter 8, beginning in verse 34. This is the great lesson in life that Satan doesn't want us to learn. And yet God wants us to learn it because it's the essence of what it takes to be a Christian. Verse 34, and when he had called the people unto him with his disciples also, he said unto them, whosoever will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his stake and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it. But whosoever shall lose his life for my sake and the gospel's, the same shall save it. So what is Jesus Christ preaching? Is Jesus Christ preaching that Christianity is the capacity to always win? Is that what Jesus Christ is preaching? He's preaching just the opposite. He's preaching that losing, learning to lose, learning to take defeat, is the key to Christianity. And once you master that key, once you master that key and you have the capacity to lose, then it frees you as a human being from all sorts of egotistical problems. It frees you from inferiority. And not only that, it opens you up as a human being to have deep love for another human being. And that's the kind of society we all want to live in. We all desperately want it, don't we? We all want this society of love where everybody is concerned about you. But the only way to have it is when people are that way. And the way to be that way is to be the way Christ tells us to be. Willing to lose, willing to give, willing to sacrifice, if necessary, for a greater good. So it's an important lesson in life. It's an important lesson if you're going to be the Christian that Christ wants you to be. It's an important lesson if you're going to be the young man or the young woman that Christ wants you to be. To me, it's one of the greatest lessons in life. And the sooner you learn it, the better off you'll be. So consider Jesus Christ. Consider your own attitude towards winning and losing. And see if maybe you can develop a better attitude and free yourself of some very harmful feelings and attitudes, and in its place, develop an attitude and a feeling for human beings that will cause a revolution in relationships within the Church of God. It really will, the more we develop it. So it's what Mr. Herbert Armstrong wants. This is what Mr. Herbert Armstrong has been preaching. This is why Mr. Herbert Armstrong writes over and over and over again about the evils of competition. Because what he wants to see in the Church of God is the kind of love that will make us what we're supposed to be. The Church of Philadelphia, the Church of Brotherly Love.